got a very emotional hot stove to get to at 4:40 today. Around college football at 5:25. And in between, we really have three big stories, one of which I just sort of alluded to. But this is one of those days where I feel like we could have led the show with three different things. We'll touch on two of them here in the open. The other we'll take care of in hot stove, and that is, I'll go ahead and just get it out of here, Wade Davis for Jorge Soler is finalized. Wade Davis, no longer a member of the Kansas City Royals. They have traded him away to the Chicago Cubs. So the last two World Series champions making a move today. The rumor started last night. That is official. We've got a lot to say about it. In the open here, though, we have a little on the basketball game last night. As much as you can take from that thing, squeezing blood out of a turnip, we will do it. And that's kind of the point of what we're about to talk about with it. But we start with K-State football. By the way, 537-1350-866-776-1350 to call the show. And as always, tweet your questions or comments to The Game KMAN. You can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheGameKMAN. The football awards from the coaches in the conference just came out today. We had the AP awards earlier in the week, and we discussed those yesterday. But here's what we have today. K-State was all over these things. The defensive player of the year in the Big 12, as per the coaches, Jordan Willis. Just like from the AP, Jordan Willis sweeps that category. Your defensive newcomer of the year, according to the coaches, Kansas State corner DJ Reed, the sophomore from Bakersfield. Your defensive freshman of the year, Reggie Walker, K-State defensive end who had 6.5 sacks during the regular season. Your defensive lineman of the year, Jordan Willis, makes sense. He was already the defensive player of the year. K-State also had 6 first-team All-Big 12 selections, just one behind the Oklahoma Sooners, who had 7. Winston Dimmel, Dalton Reisner, Byron Pringle, Jordan Willis, Elijah Lee, DJ Reed. All on the first-team All-Big 12 selections. Now, there's a lot of guys on honorable mention, nobody on second team, and we could quabble over some of that, but I think we'd be missing the big picture here. And that is, look at this. You combine this with the 8-4 finish to the season and some of the message that we sent to you yesterday that perhaps we were too caught up in the moment and too caught up in the minutia of the way some of K-State's games went down this year to fully realize and see the forest through the trees, that this was a pretty nice season, finishing 8-4 with the youngest team that Bill Snyder's ever had. I think this just adds to it. You can take that narrative from yesterday, sprinkle this on top, and you feel even sillier about some of the stuff that we got as worried about as we did throughout the season, as frustrated about, as upset about, whatever you want to put into perspective there, because the reflection of this is things are pretty good with the program. I mean, you have these 6 first-team All-Big 12 picks, sophomore, senior, junior, sophomore. All but Jordan Willis are coming back. Jordan Willis obviously had 2 of the major awards, but the other 2 are sophomore freshmen on K-State's defense. Things look pretty good. This program that we felt like I think at times this year was in a ton of disarray is actually doing just fine. They're 8-4, playing in a pretty exciting bowl game against Texas A&M. And they're set to bring a lot back, and this just accentuates that.
It's a school record for the most specialty awards the K-State has won through the Big 12, even more than in 1998 or 2000 or 2003 or 2011 or 2012, all of those great years. K-State had never had 4 different specialty awards that they had taken home, and most of the years that they had taken 3, that included either Bill Snyder being your coach of the year, who obviously isn't a player, or having a special teams player of the year who is probably, I mean, that award is probably the most insignificant out of all of them just because it is special teams instead of offense or defense. But you had 4
Don't
here.
Don't you trot that narrative around here in Manhattan, Kansas.
I know. I'm just saying that they are on the field for a smaller percentage of the time than offensive players or defensive players. So I think that it's huge. And like you mentioned, 5 out of the 6 on first team are going to be back. But how about this? Out of the 12 total players that are listed, whether it be for a specialty award, first team offense, first team defense, or honorable mention, 10 of those 12 are coming back next year or are supposed to be. And I think that that says an awful lot about where the program is at and how silly it's been that we've had, let's just phrase it this way, that we've had as much content as we have had for Tweet of the Moment over the course of the season, because K-State is in a pretty good spot right now. They could be 10-2. They could be, say, at the Alamo Bowl, but they're 8-4, and they're going to be probably a top 3 pick in the conference going into 2017, and that's just fine.
And don't get me wrong here. I'm not blaming you as the fans. I mean, I know we just crack a joke there about what we have for Tweet of the Moment. We were right there with you for the most part. Now, we have to temper ourselves from saying some of the things that come up in Tweet of the Moment, for sure. But I understand, and I've said this all along, I get where the frustration was, and I was with a lot of people on a lot of it. But I think what I said, not being able to see the forest through the trees there, is some of what it was. I'll be honest, I was having a conversation with, I don't even know that I should throw the specific name out, but it was before the TCU game. So this is even before we saw what K-State did against TCU. And it was a conversation about someone who I trust football knowledge-wise a lot more than me and K-State football knowledge-wise a lot more than me. And he seemed surprised when, in conversation, it kind of got brought up, the frustration with the offense at times this year and the lack of Alex Barnes until the end of the year, the number of carries he was getting, not fully trusting going to the run game perhaps as early as they should have. A lot of those concerns. The answer and response I got back was, do you look at what they're putting up yards per play? You look at how much they're scoring, where they rank all in all here in the Big 12. And I actually had to just, I was knocked back on my heels a little bit and just had to say, that's a fair point. That's a fair point. I can nitpick specific little things here and maybe they didn't reach their full potential. But the bottom line is, things wound up being a pretty successful product. That 5.3 yards per carry that they have, best Bill Snyder has ever had as a team at K-State. They averaged 290 rushing yards over the last 6 weeks of the season. Don't care who you played. That's really good. That's getting it done. To borrow a quote that we have poked some fun at, that's being a top five run scheming offense in the country. That is of that level.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, all this recognition that we're seeing here on the first team All-Big 12 list and the major awards, it makes sense that you're seeing that come because this team had a fairly successful season.
I'm reminded of the Texas game when K-State was coming off of a victory against Iowa State in which Justin Silliman was an absolute beast. And the first half of that Texas game, if you'll recall, K-State's offense was really, really good. I mean, it really was clicking on all cylinders. And there was at one point where I think K-State did have to settle for a field goal in the red zone. And I got some people asking me, you know, where is Justin Silliman? Why is he not playing? This is absolutely absurd. And you look at that little number, yards per rush as a team. K-State was averaging 7.8 yards per rush as a team at that point in the game. And people were upset because they weren't seeing Justin Silliman. And I think that that goes into the Alex Barnes thing as well down the stretch. Maybe K-State could have been a little bit better offensively. But if you're having success, you have to acknowledge that that is success and not failure. And I think that that's something that the fans and us, to a certain extent, have had a hard time grasping over the course of this season.
And I do think there's a big dividing line between what we in the media and what the fans think and what's actually going on inside those walls. I'll expand upon this point that we had yesterday a little bit more. I was having also recently, this may not have been on Saturday, but it was within the last week or two, conversation with a former player, recent player, and I had made the comment that, you know, it just seems like so many of these seasons lately have been really chaotic, really up and down, and there's a lot of drama, and then it sort of works out in the end. And the response I got back was, well, I mean, I never really felt like there was that much drama. We never felt too much drama. It gets protected on the inside because of the way Bill Snyder handles everything, and I think another part of it is just everybody on the outside making too much of it. I think there's a lot of that mixed in there as well.
So, I think that's fair.
K-State, again, with six first-team All-Big 12 picks, according to the coaches. They have the Defensive Player of the Year, the Defensive Lineman of the Year, the Defensive Freshman of the Year, and the Defensive Newcomer of the Year. We'll talk a little bit more about that throughout the show, including, I think, one really undervalued success story that we have not talked enough about, one of the guys that was honored on a lot of those lists. And we'll talk a little bit more about that with Kellis Robinette from the Wichita Eagle and Kansas City Star as well at 425. Did you enjoy that basketball game last night? That was a real exciting game with the boys from Prairie View A&M. I feel like the game was about as exciting as my preview of it yesterday was on the show. Went about as swimmingly as that. I mean, look, in all seriousness, K-State seemed in a lot of ways to be sleepwalking through a lot of that game early, and I can't really blame them. It is hard to muster up energy in a game like that. And this is, I think, one of the points we've been trying to make and hammer home with the non-conference schedule that they're playing this year. You've got basically seven home games like that that are home games against really bad teams where you know the arena is not going to be very full. It certainly wasn't last night, and it becomes a pretty lifeless environment and an environment in which you have to create your own energy, and that's not an easy thing when there's not an obvious motivating factor. There are some games coming up that I think give you the extra element of being able to muster up some energy. Washington State's horrible, but you're playing them in Sprint Center. It's a big arena. I think that gives you reason to be up. St. Louis is horrible, but you were playing a true road game with two of your teammates playing at home. I think that was enough to add some extra energy to it. You're going to play Colorado State in Denver. That's a big NBA arena. I think that falls under the same category. But these home games, I can't blame the players. It is hard for me to blame the players. Or Bruce Weber, who took the blame last night and said, hey, I should have had these guys more ready to play. I'm not sure what you can really do to get them to be that fired up to play a game like that last night against Prairie View A&M, who had just lost to Houston by 45 before coming in here. And that leads us to the ultimate question here, which is, what is being gained from playing these games?
Well, it's one of the downsides to what K-State's scheduling philosophy was for this year. I think that K-State did go out and intentionally go a little bit lighter on the non-conference schedule this year, knowing that they need to make the NCAA tournament and knowing that they needed to have some time to develop some of their younger talent going into conference play, especially in the front court with Isaiah Maurice and Dante Williams. But this is one of the negative effects of that. You can only have so many times where your team runs out of the tunnel and they see a Prairie View A&M or a Hampton or, you know, whatever you want to throw out there before they just start basically seeing the same team. You know, it's basically just going out there and seeing the equivalent of like a JV team. And you can only get excited about that so many times before it really starts to just weigh down on you. Man, why can't we, you know, get geared up for some of those big-time competition, the big-time opponents that we're going to play? Just one of the negatives that you have to live with. And it's not totally, as I was telling you earlier, it's not totally K-State's fault that a lot of these teams are not better than they are. They didn't expect St. Louis to be good, but certainly not to be this bad. Same can be said for Boston College, Washington State, Colorado State. That's not all K-State's fault. But when you don't, or when you decide to not bring anyone into Bramlage at all, this is something that's going to happen.
It's not a perfect analogy, but in the context of us doing the show, you know, we're doing this for the most part 5 days a week. At times, like especially in the summer here, and this past year, a good example is late summer when the Royals were to the point where they're basically out of it. There's not always all that much to talk about and no real dominant story, and it's just not as exciting as it is, say, yesterday when you're coming in a day after K-State has the first show that we're doing after K-State has a big win in football and they have an exciting bowl game matchup coming up and there's a lot of stuff to talk about. Naturally, you're going to be more energetic, more excited, and more motivated to talk about those types of things and make it a really good show. Now, is there an art to taking the slow days, making them entertaining, making them fun, making them good shows? Absolutely there is. But there's a natural tendency there to make it much more difficult to get to that point. And I think that's what you're seeing. You know, that's our example of what I'm seeing from the men's basketball team in a lot of these games, because a lot of them have followed this same pattern. You know, the Omaha, Robert Morris, Hampton, all these games that they've played at home, in a lot of ways have followed the same sort of pattern where there's just a big stretch, where there's a lull, there's not much energy, and then they turn it on enough to get a decently lopsided win. But there's just not a whole lot of substance there, I think. Now, look, Dean Wade had a good game. He's trending upward right now. That's good. We'll talk about that a little more at 5:10, including, I thought, some really telling audio from one of his teammates last night. And they tried to work in some of the deeper on the bench guys, but I'm not sure how successful that was necessarily. We'll have a hot stove at 4:40 with the Wade Davis news, our takes on the Royals getting rid of their all-star closer, Wade Davis. But coming up next, Kellis Robinette from the Wichita Eagle and Kansas City Star joins us. Did he vote Jordan Willis Defensive Player of the Year? See if he'll tell us coming up here on the game.